Chapter 38. A Sharp Business Practice. Henry Mayhew, the great observer, reformer and classifier of Victorian society, once listed the various types of criminals in England. The list had 5 major categories, 20 subheadings and more than 100 separate entries. To the modern eye, the list is remarkable for the absence of any consideration of what is now called white-collar crime. Of course, such crime existed at the time, and there were some flagrant examples of embezzlement, forgery, false accounting, bond manipulation, and other illegal practices that came to light during the mid-century. In 1850, an insurance clerk named Walter Watts was caught after he embezzled more than £70,000, and there were several crimes much larger. Leopold Redpath's £150,000 in forgeries on the Great Northern Railway Company, and Beaumont Smith's £350,000 in counterfeit exchequer bonds, to name 2 examples. Then, as now, white-collar crime involved the largest sums of money, was the least likely to be detected, and was punished most leniently if the participants were ever apprehended. Yet Mayhew's list of criminals ignores this sector of crime entirely. For Mayhew, along with the majority of his contemporaries, was firmly committed to the belief that crime was the product of the dangerous classes, and that criminal behaviour sprang from poverty, injustice, oppression, and lack of education. It was almost a matter of definition. A person who was not from the criminal class could not be committing a crime. Persons of a better station were merely breaking the law. Several factors unique to the Victorian attitude towards upper-class crime contributed to this belief. First, in a newly capitalistic society, with thousands of emerging businesses, the principles of honest accounting were not firmly established, and accounting methods were understood to be even more variable than they are today. A man might, with a fairly clear conscience, blur the distinction between fraud and sharp business practices. Second, the modern watchdog of all Western capitalist countries, the government, was nowhere near so vigilant then. Personal incomes below £150 annually were not taxed, and the great majority of citizens fell beneath this limit. Those who were taxed got off lightly by modern standards, and although people grumbled about the cost of government, there was no hint yet of the modern citizen's frantic scramble to arrange his finances in such a way as to avoid as much tax as possible.